I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to Wood Talk. Now here are three guys who came, saw, and saw it again. Until they ran out of wood. Mark, Shannon, and Matt.
All right, what's up, everybody? It's show number 566, and on today's show, we're doing another Oops! All Questions episode. We're going to talk about some new tools, the longevity of glue joints, uses
Isn't
for CNC.
Show based on answering questions?
And domestic hardwood alternatives. But before we get to that, we want to let you know that Wood Talk is brought to you by Rockler. Rockler's been helping customers create with confidence for over 65 years. Rockler's giving away a $250 gift card to one lucky Wood Talk listener.
$250, baby!
Enter for your chance to win before January 31st at rockler.com/woodtalk.
And if you want another URL you can go to, you can go to patreon.com/woodtalk. And nice. Sign up to become a patron of the show. I thought it was a pretty nice little tie-in there. Like, that's like the same kind of structure. It's pretty sweet.
Sure.
This time we're thanking Andy Wisnowski, Canyon Washburn, and Matthew DeJong.
Very nice. Thanks, everybody, for supporting us. We love that.
Appreciate you.
Hey, I'm going to start today's show off with something, a little surprise for you guys. I got a stack of Christmas dad jokes for my kids, and this has been a nonstop supply of entertainment for me and my family. And I'm going to share it with you guys, so see if you can get this one. Will Santa launch an online alternative to his usual delivery service? That's the question.
I don't know.
He's toying with the idea.
Are you serious?
Oh
boy.
No. No. No.
It's great. I got more of these. I'll save some
don't.
For the rest of the show.
Nope.
Ready?
If he would, he'd slay it.
Oh,
very nice. All right. Well, quick announcement. Mentioned it last time. I'm going to mention it again this time. I'm doing a book signing and a meet and greet at my local St. Louis Woodcraft. And I think it's February 3rd, 9 a.m. Come see me. Come see Nicole. We'll both be there. Even if you don't want to buy a book, just come say hi. Come hang out. We'll be there. It'll be a lot of fun.
I'll have limited edition simple varnish finish DVDs.
Yes.
To give away.
Yes. I'm not going to tell you. All right, I'll tell you. I threw some of those away.
Like I That's had what so I'm many. Saying. You got to be able to give them away.
My mom hung coasters. On to them way too long. It got to a point where the writing was on the wall about DVDs, and I was like, Mom, just start giving them away. If someone orders a t-shirt, throw a DVD in there. I don't want the inventory anymore. And she's very possessive with my money and my stuff. So she refused to do it. And then when we moved into the firehouse, I found like two boxes of old DVDs. And I'm like, Mom, these should have been gone by now. So yeah, I actually did have to throw some away. Sorry.
Now you can have a fire sale.
Freaking useless. I mean, what are you going to do with them? And they're also authored using Apple products back then, which made them kind of not totally stable on all DVD players.
Yep.
So like, even if I gave it to someone who happened to still have a DVD player, they'd probably write me and be like, well, I can't get it to work, you know? So it's too much trouble.
Well, it was free.
Find mine.
Yeah, it was free. Suck it up. Okay.
I have mine somewhere on the bookshelf over there. Yeah,
I think it's on the barn somewhere with all my books and stuff, woodworking stuff.
It's holding up a corner of a table. Keeps it from rocking.
Right. All right. Well, I think it's time for another joke. What do you call an Eskimo's cow?
Ice cream?
Wow.
An Eskimo.
Oh, wow.
All right. With that, let's get into our episode.
Eskimo.
So this is a dining table episode, but we're not going to hash out a topic. We're just going to answer questions. We like to clean out that inbox when we can. First one here is for our frequent emailer, Alex Adams. He says, not particularly new since it came out a few months ago. Wait, didn't I get this out of here? Never mind. We're not doing that one. Let's go to the next one he had. This is also Alex Adams. It's the Alex Adams Hour. He says, I came across a universal drill attachment called the Bullseye Bore that uses lasers to make sure you are drilling a straight hole. As I'm writing this, they haven't launched their Kickstarter campaign with pricing, but they do have a website with demo videos. Personally, I would just use a drill bushing for straight holes that can't be drilled using a drill press. But would you ever want to use lasers to drill straight holes? This thing is at Bullseye Bore, exactly how you expect it to be spelled, bullseyebore.com. And it looks like just this little hooch that goes onto your drill, and it spins. While the drill is spinning, it looks like it casts, like, what, 3 or 4 little concentric circles. And you could tell when you're not true because they kind of reorient themselves and the spacing changes. I don't know. That's kind of cool. I don't know how often I have to do this. I do work in a shop that has a drill press and other ways to accomplish that. But I think if you're, you know, getting picky about your precision, or maybe, I don't know, you're working on a job site and you got a new guy who just has bad vision, you throw that thing on his drill as like a punishment, like so you can watch what he's doing. I don't know. What do you think? You guys would want something like this?
I think there's specific use cases where this would be kind of handy.
Mm-hmm.
If you didn't want to use any of the other many methods to drill your bench dog holes in your workbench, this could be somewhat useful to get that going.
Yeah, there you go.
I will tell you this. The examples they have on their website, I'm like, these don't really, this is all construction stuff. And clearly, the level of precision isn't really needed for these things we're doing.
The whole,
especially the one in drywall.
Yeah, I'm like, he's drawing a hole through drywall, and it's got to be perfectly square. I'm like, why? What the hell are you doing that needs that level of precision?
Well, listen, like, maybe when you put that drywall anchor through there, if that thing isn't dead perpendicular to the surface, it just ain't going to work.
Dead nuts perpendicular. Maybe for Windsor chair makers, if they happen to have any square angles, because a lot of those are drilled freehand. No,
I don't think there are any.
They're shaking. I thought of that too. Head.
Like, there might be a use for lasers in that, but it's not for this because you're almost never going
perpendicular. I know they use lasers to get all their weird angles lined up and everything, but I wasn't sure if there's some weird random joint that happens to be square, but
the one joint
in retrospect.
Now here's the question. I actually just clicked off of the site. Does it work if you drill horizontally? Yeah, it must if it's going to drywall.
It says angled, horizontal, and vertical.
Yep.
Okay. But it's angled. How does that work?
Okay.
Like
they're
so
saying
you're still
angled.
Creating 90 degrees.
You're always going to be perpendicular to the face you're drilling at all times.
All they did was move the board is at an angle, but the drill still needs to be perpendicular to the board.
Yeah.
Well, look, I think if you see this product and you go, oh, yes, you know it.
Yeah, right.
I don't think I would buy this just because I don't look at that and go, oh, that solves a problem that I have. But hey, innovation and new ideas, and hopefully it's inexpensive enough that everybody can get one if they need one. Nothing wrong with new products.
We'll
look out for the Kickstarter on that one.
I think it would depend on how much it actually costs in the end.
Yeah,
if it's like a fairly inexpensive product, yeah, it'd be nice to have just to have around in case you're doing something. Like
$20 accessory or something.
Yeah, I think they would sell pretty well, but I don't know
what
the price point's going to be yet.
We shall see. Inquiring minds want to know. All right, Matt, you got the next one.
I'm busy looking at Bullseye Bore stuff.
Don't look. You can't buy it yet. Don't waste your time.
I was going to check out the Kickstarter. Anyway, this is from Chris. Common domestic hardwood alternatives. Chris says, I'm getting bored with the same few species of domestic hardwood on every project. Oak, cherry, maple, and walnut are the most available in my area, Northeast Ohio, and they are all great. But I'd like to expand my horizons a bit and start working with a few other North American hardwoods. My local lumber suppliers don't have much beyond the aforementioned species, and what they do have in the realm of uncommon woods, seems to be priced quite high with limited selection. I don't have any specific projects in mind at the moment. I'm just looking for a general purpose jack of all trades, but cheaper than oak and prettier than hard maple wood. I don't know if you're going to find that. I'm not looking for anything super exotic, expensive, or difficult to find. In essence, I'm tired of driving a boring four-door sedan and can't afford Mercedes, so I'm looking for the mid-level pickup truck of woods. Okay.
Hmm.
All right.
Interesting metaphor.
Okay. So anyway, do you have any suggestions for other species or have any suggestions for other reasonably priced general purpose woods to take a look at? I know Shannon does, so maybe let Mark or Matt answer first.
All right, you shut up, Shannon.
You just go ahead.
You sit there.
Yeah, the guy who works in the lumber industry probably has something to say, but I don't want to hear from him.
You sit there and look pretty, all right? You know, I'm noticing a trend though, guys, in all, like a lot of our emails that we got, there are instructions for how we should answer it.
And who should answer
a lot
it?
Of people will
in
do
what
this.
Order?
You know, I think this question would be best for so-and-so and then they ask it, or can so-and-so answer this first and then the other two can go. Like it's hilarious. All you guys right. are funny.
I will just look pretty.
Well, you don't have to work hard at that. I mean, it's pretty much automatic.
It's very easy.
So one paragraph that you had to skip there, Matt, he does mention some of the ones that he's looked at. And if he can't find them locally, he's going to like CR Muterspaw, mm-hmm. Bell Forest, both great resources for this stuff. But he mentions alder, sassafras, hickory, white ash, and butternut. One of the challenges I think he's going to have here, though, is if you can't find it easily locally and you're going to have to constantly mail order this stuff, I mean, other than to satisfy your curiosity, is that really what you want to do? You know, sometimes just like the local domestic stuff you have access to that you get the best deals on is the way to go because that's what's available. So I don't know, just in terms of thinking about that, like I wouldn't mind working with some of those things too, but if I can't find it easily, I just kind of lose interest in it. I don't want to have to mail order everything. But aside from that, since Shannon can't talk, Matt.
Yes.
You do a lot of local stuff. Like there's a lot of things
local.
You don't work with because it didn't fall down in your city. So
that is correct.
Is there anything you think you might be missing out on?
I mean, you definitely have more than just those species in Northeast Ohio. Like there's a lot more there than just oak and walnut and cherry and whatever else you said. Here's a question for Shannon. I'm going to throw this to Shannon real quick before I actually answer the question.
Is that allowed?
Go bother Shannon about this.
That's allowed.
Email Chris and ask him if we can.
I don't
throw
know
this to Shannon,
but I'm allowed to do whatever I want. So
oh, okay, that's true.
That's an unwritten rule, I think.
Yeah. Matt put that generation mark where he can do whatever. Everything he says is special.
Okay, gotcha.
So in the lumber industry, where do most lumber places draw the line of actually differentiating species over collective species, like white oak? Obviously, that's many different species of white oak. We all kind of know that one's a little bit more common. Like this is a categorical thing, not necessarily like an actual species, although you can actually buy actual white oak. Like white ash. What species of ash is typically collected in? I bought ash today. Is that all species of
ash
normally? Like around here, we have pretty much all just green ash. I've never used white ash, but I have used black ash, which is typically sold as its own thing because it's got a different working property than green ash. So I think that's maybe like the first level of like, there is a little bit of like nomenclature thing you got to like think about as you're buying unique species of wood that maybe you are already, they're just lumped into other categories of wood.
Yeah. Yeah. I think for the most part, there's probably more what I would refer to as conglomerate species.
That's a good word
than
for it.
Not.
Yes.
And especially in exotics. Like the African mahogany thing is ridiculous. There's like 90 different species. Ash is all ash, and it's not. Fraxinus americana, white ash, is definitely not the same as black ash. But I think what happens is these places, they're bringing it in bulk, you know, and those are coming from large aggregate yards who are developing truckload quantities of material, and they're just not sorting for this stuff. But then while black ash has a different working property, there's more white ash than there is black ash. And white ash is going to give you a little bit more predictability on grading as well as drying and all that fun stuff. So the bulk of it is going to be similar to that. Same thing with the oaks. There are a lot of white oaks, but there are some white oaks that are particularly gnarly and don't quite work the same or look the same. And those get basically not cut in the first place. But there's...
At least, so here, when I cut white oak, it's almost always bur oak. It's not actual like... whatever the actual species of white oak is. but it's classified under the general conglomerate of white oak.
Mm-hmm. Very common.
I don't know where I'm going with this.
Yeah,
well, and a lot of it just depends on whom are you buying from. Do they have a sawmill? Are they sawing their own wood? If so, then there's a greater chance that you might be getting bur oak or, you know, mm-hmm. Some other species of, you know, within the Quercus genus. But if they don't have a sawmill and they're buying from another sawmill, they're probably getting vanilla, you know, white oak, Quercus alba, you know, that's it.
Mm-hmm. So I guess what I'm trying to get to with this is that most people don't realize that that is actually happening. Like there's this conglomeration of species that fall into what the actual like scientific species versus the lumber species or like could be two mm-hmm. separately different things.
Sure.
In a lot of cases.
Yeah. Well, it's like, I recently did a most recent podcast on the lumber update was about pine. And I made the point to talk about SPF, spruce, pine, fir, construction lumber is most definitely not pine. People generically call, I'm going to go to Home Depot and buy some pine 2x4s. And the irony is that 90% of it is not pine. It's spruce and fir. Mm-hmm. But they don't even bother to differentiate. It's just SPF. The product is SPF. And it's like seven different species across the country. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Very much the way things go. But I think the other point here, Matt, is you could continue. He's bored with oak, cherry, maple, and walnut. Well, maybe you don't have to go that far afield. Like maple alone, plain old maple can be quite boring. Well, maybe look into buying some of the brown maple or buy some big leaf maple sure. or buy some soft maple. Or there's a bunch of different cherries. Although from a lumber perspective, black cherry is kind of where it's at. But oh my God, oak? There's so much in oak. I mean, he's not even saying red or white.
Yeah.
So anyway, sorry, I'm talking. I'm not supposed to.
You shut up over there. I think we got to look more top level than this. Like, I don't think he is looking for that kind of info necessarily. He's like, what have I not discovered yet? Are there other domestics?
I because maybe he discovered it and didn't notice or didn't know.
Yeah.
That's something he could discover within those categories he mentioned.
Yeah,
you're going to have similar working properties because it's still kind of like in that same kind of category, but you sure. have different grains and different colors because they're actually different species.
Yeah. Well, and for me, I'm not really good to speak to this because 99% of what I build is it's going to be cherry or walnut most of the time, maybe some maple. Pretty boring with my wood selection these days. Okay. Well, I mean, I think we really helped him very much, but
go find a local mill.
Yeah.
Because what Mark said at the first part is most important. I could tell you, like, first thing I would say is elm, American elm. Love it. It's totally different than anything else. It's kind of coarse grain like oak, but it looks different. It's so outside the usual suspects of what we're used to seeing. And I think elm should get more play. But can you get it? If you can't get it, then what good does that recommendation do?
Well, if you got a mail order, you just let me know. I got elm. I can send you some elm.
There you go. See,
I got elm slabs in the barn right now, ready to go. American elm.
Well, and I think that's the thing. Dealers generally are selling the stuff that sells, and they're like, that's the only time I ever tend to encounter a local species or something where I'm like, oh, I've never worked with sassafras before, because someone stopped by and they're like, hey, check this out. I've got this board. Do you want it? And I find out what it is. Right? Like, I think Shannon, I may have asked you or both of you. When I found a board out in the woods behind the shop and I brought it in, planed it down, and I was trying to identify what it was. And it was an old like sugar shack or something that was just in the woods. And we just pulled this board out of there and I had no idea what it was. And one of you guys identified it for me, or maybe it was the guild group. I don't know, but I couldn't tell what it was. And it was something that was like, oh, that's pretty cool. And it was decent, hard, good quality, dense wood. But it's definitely not something that I would have easily been able to go locally and say, hey, can I get 100 board feet of that particular thing? Because there's just this oddball piece, you know? So
yeah, because it's not so much about it's difficult to get. It, can you get it consistently? From a retailer perspective, you may get a log of sweet gum. There's another one. Great species. Mm-hmm. Super, super straight trunk. Long, long boards. Great straight grain. But if your business is based around like building repeat customers and things like that, and every time they show up, you have different inventory, that may sound great for like the average garage woodworker. But for like the guys who are doing this for a living, they want to count on the fact that I got good cherry from this guy. You know, I can't necessarily... Every piece of furniture I'm going to build is going to be a different species of wood. I may not know how that works, and it may take some time to understand the inner workings of it. But yeah, like I can't build a business around unique product offerings.
Yeah.
So this is, and this is where I think, sorry, I'm talking again, but here's the differentiation that I've been trying to get to on the Lumber Update podcast is this grassroots effort, the Wood Miser owners, the Matt Cremonas of the world that are sawing what happens to fall. This is fantastic. We need more of this. And it is in no way a threat to the lumber industry because they're totally different markets. The lumber industry does not want to deal with sassafras. We don't want to deal with the sweet gums and things like that. We want, you know, local wood misers and Lucas Mill owners. So what I would say to Chris is go search those people out. They're out there. Believe me, they're out there.
There's a lot of them in that area.
Yeah. And all of the suppliers, the wood miser manufacturers, the Lucas Mill manufacturers, the Logasol, they all have directories, or call them up and say, here's where I live. Point me in that direction. They want their sawmill owners to get business. And if Woodmiser can throw business to a Woodmiser owner, oh, it's great. So go seek those out and you'll be surprised what you'll find. There's a lot out there. Yeah. Buckeye. There's a fun one.
Oh, yeah.
He's in Ohio. It's the Buckeye State. Come on.
There you go. Very nice.
Siri, Polonia. I could go on. But I'm not supposed to.
I have to, because I'm supposed to speak for you, Shannon. I'll definitely plug your... I forget when the first time I like heard you talk about this concept. I think it was, that was many years ago. You did some kind of like online webcast for Pop Wood that I like bought and watched.
Remember those?
I don't know. Like maybe 2015 or something. I don't know. But the whole thing was like going through like all the moduluses and going through and like finding things that are comparable on the mathematical side.
I actually taught that. I taught that at Woodworking in America in the room next to you. Well, you were teaching. I was next door teaching that class.
I think I had heard before that. Properties. I heard before that though.
Yeah,
it was like a webcast.
Because I did the pop.
And I didn't know you back then.
Thing.
I was like, it's that Shannon guy that I saw in the early Apple days podcasts. Of.
Yep, enhanced, enhanced podcasts and online webinars. Oh, yeah,
yes, good stuff. That was a little webinar thing. Yeah. But the first time I had heard about it from anybody, and it happened to me from you, I'm like, oh, that's a really good way to like objectively look at like, is this piece of wood going to work like this other piece of wood that I have more experience with? What's that going to be like? I'm like, so like, go to Shannon for this because he actually knows the ins and outs of comparing pieces of wood. So if you're used to working with those species of wood, you can go through the wood database and find species that are going to work very similar to them, and you'll kind of feel at home with. You're branching out, but you kind of know what you're getting into, so to speak.
You go. Well, you guys know who else sells wood? Really, a good place for Chris to maybe go and see what other varieties might be out there.
And they'll build your whole project for you.
They might.
Yeah, it's true.
Bring your cut list. Specify which tools you'd like them to use, and hopefully you got an hour or a place to go to lunch while they do it.
Which employee you want to use those tools? Who can actually talk while you're in the room?
Yeah, things exactly. Like that.
Yeah, you know,
we're talking about
like
our friends
a whole
over at
concessions
Rockler.
Line. You can like get your concessions while you're watching your guy do your project for you because they got those glass
I
rooms
still think,
now. So you can like sit in the bleachers.
We had a whole,
having your
we had a whole episode that was about like talking about them selling hot dogs, right? Like they really should have food at the store. There's no reason not to.
Yeah, the hot dog cart out in front of my Home Depot does great business. Are you kidding me?
Right? Then imagine if they brought it in.
I would go there for lunch. Absolutely, I go there for lunch.
I do. It's good. They're good hot dogs.
Hot dog and a soda. Come on. Doesn't get better than that. All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about Rockler and not hot dogs. Create the perfect cabinet, work table, or shop cart system for your workshop. The Rock Steady shop stand kits from Rockler feature strong, heavy gauge steel construction and pre-drilled holes for easy assembly and accessorizing. These are the best workshop stands in the business. Mix and match shop stand dimensions to suit your needs. Choose from one of Rockler's complete kits, or you could select individual shop stand components and accessories. Rockler's Rock Steady shop stand configurator. You gotta love these configurators they come up with.
They make good configurators.
Love it. They make it easy to design and shop for the perfect custom workshop stand. Head to rockler.com for more info. And of course, we're going to put that link in the show notes for you. But Shannon, you just put one of these together, right? Didn't you mention it?
I did. Yeah. I bought the, I configurated it myself.
Configurated it.
Got the, you know, it's basically the corner supports, and I added in a shelf and I added in some pegboard side panels. I did not buy a top. I already had a top for that. But yeah, really cool.
It's great.
I bought the casters for it and everything. You can swap it in. You can get rolling casters or little self-leveling pad feet or whatever. And yeah, put drawers on it, all kinds of stuff.
It's a thing of beauty.
It's fantastic.
All right.
Blue pegboard. Okay, this is from Nathan. He wants to know about Titebon and its longevity.
Mm.
From previous episodes, I think I know your opinion on this. You feel like you...
So you we don't have like to answer it.
I guess
next
not.
Question.
Yeah.
All good.
Styles change and your grandkids perhaps aren't going to want to have your furniture in their houses. But for those of us that want to build pieces that will last millennia, I have a question for you about modern glues and longevity. If you look at antique pieces, the places where most damage occurs is at the joints and essentially the wood glue has failed. Are modern wood glues really that better where in 100 years or so ago, they'll be just as good when first glued up? Will loose tenon joints like a domino hold for hundreds of years with Titebon, or should we go to the extreme and start pinning draw boring those dominoes? Is Titebon or epoxy better for the long haul?
Do you think do we have an answer to this? Has enough time gone by that we could say for sure? Like true time tested? I mean, what's PVA? 100 years old, maybe?
Yeah, maybe.
100 something?
I honestly don't know. That's a good question. How long has PVA, and for that matter, have there been like dramatic changes in the formulation from like year one to now? I would imagine there was probably this like curve where it
a refinement.
They figured something out and they got really, really much, much better in year five. And then it's pretty much been the same for the last 95 years or whatever. I still think that failure and all of this stuff comes down to just bad joinery. Certainly you find where things break on stress points in antique furniture, like chairs, you know, the crest rail, because people always pick a chair up by the crest rail and move it around. And that's where it gets a lot. Or the back legs tend to fall apart. And the ones that fall apart are the ones that weren't pinned, because that's really where you use a draw bore, on the back legs of a chair. But like the cabinets and things, I don't know. I still think that good joinery, and honestly, like domino joinery, is really good joinery. When you consider you have to hammer that loose tenon in, I can't imagine that's going to fall apart. I'd imagine any glue you put on a domino would last well for hundreds of years.
And I think conditions matter, you know, like how the item is stored, you know, most homes being climate controlled and conditioned, and maybe that can help the longevity of these things as well.
Oh, definitely.
And an interesting aspect of this, when we look at some of the old pieces that, you know, maybe museum pieces or things that are antiques, the glues they were using back then were probably what, hide glue and animal, generated materials. Mm-hmm. But what's also interesting about that is when you're choosing glue for your project, you do have to think about longevity. So if you're doing something like a chair, a musical instrument, being able to repair those things is a factor too. So when you're using regular wood glue and you have a break, that sometimes is a catastrophic break or a destructive break in the sense that you need to completely redo something to fix it. Whereas with a hide glue joint or, you know, one of these other animal glues, you can sometimes get away with just adding some moisture, you know, a little bit of heat, and you can get those things apart and do a repair. You know, with all these pieces of furniture made with a more permanent glue, in a sense, when there's something that happens to it, fixing it is a lot less likely than thereby sort of shortening its life in a way. I don't know, maybe.
Agreed.
Just kind of noodling a little bit about it. Because I've been using a lot more liquid hide glue just for the open time. I got a nice, probably, I don't know how long the shelf life is on something like Titebon's liquid hide glue, but I've got a bottle that, like, you could barely read the label anymore. It's been used so much, but I should say it's been around so long. I don't use it that much, but I've started using hide glue a lot more. I don't want to get into the whole, you know, double boiler or a warming pot for, you know, traditional hide glue. But in liquid state, I'm like, yeah, would I rather use this than epoxy? Yeah. Like, it works great on interior projects. Never had a problem with it. So I've been using the heck out of hide glue lately. Good long open time.
But good stuff.
Yeah,
well done.
Good
Mark.
Stuff.
Well done. I kind of hope that, just so that I can laugh at them, people start draw boring their dominoes.
They should. Well, I think I did it once. Doing a breadboard end with dominoes just to show what the process would be. And I wouldn't recommend it. It's not great.
I think the draw bore is the perfect representation of like woodworking media in whatever form and how like things catch like wildfire. Like Schwarz like reintroduced the draw bore. Like he introduced all of us to the draw bore. Nobody had heard of it before Chris came along. Obviously it's an ancient technique. then suddenly everybody was draw boring every damn joint on a project. It's like, you're missing the point here, people. Yeah. We don't have to draw bore everything now. Quit draw boring those joints. It's a static load. You don't need a draw bore in there. Mm-hmm. But yeah, now that's, and then the funny thing is like, now I'm draw boring and I'm now I'm worried about glue. Like, you don't even need glue when you put a draw bore in. Come on.
Well, going back to what you said initially, Shannon, the doing some kind of a pinned joint, when I would do a lot of refinishing early in my out of science and into woodworking career, I would take on whatever work I could get. And a lot of times we get like a whole bunch of chairs or something from a restaurant, and they would still be held together, but the only thing holding those joints together was a little pin that was placed through there, a little wooden pin. And fortunately, that was a pretty easy repair to fix that. But that was a big lesson, because like some of these other joints are just going to come right apart if you don't have that pin there. And that's one that is not a static load. That's a repeated load in an environment that things just get abused, because it's not my chair. I don't care. So I'm leaning back on it all the time. Like they get mistreated all the time. And the only thing keeping that thing from falling apart was that pin. It's, you know, a decent insurance policy, but definitely not something you want to do in every case. I think it's time for another joke. What did one snowman say to the other?
Ice balls.
Matt, this is a family show. What do you think? That's a good one. I like yours better than the actual answer. He said, "Can you smell carrots too?"
Oh, yeah.
All right. Next question is from Rocco. You know, it's got to be great going around the world with the name Rocco.
Seriously.
It's a cool name.
You get, it's just great. You get more respect when you name Rocco. Like, people give you a wide berth. You know, here comes Rocco.
I wouldn't mess with Rocco.
It's Cousin Vinny.
Yeah. It's definitely a guy you don't want to mess with. All right. Well, Rocco says, my school has a full metal shop with CNC, so I'm very familiar with the CNC process and have been teaching Fusion 360 for 12 years. I am considering adding a wood CNC machine, but I'm not sure if it's actually that useful for us and wanted your opinions. So he came to the three guys, none of which own a CNC, to ask this question.
Shannon, like, walks by them at work.
Yeah, it's true.
I've seen one before. No, I've actually have
been,
had one.
I've been in a room with three of them at the same time. That's right.
Okay, well, from what I can tell, they are most useful for batching out cabinets, making Etsy-type products that focus on engraving. I cut templates out of plastic on the Haas CNC, so I don't see it as a use case for that, but it could be. I make laminated zero-clearance plates for miter and table saws out of scraps, and I could see it being useful for batching those out and the precision routing operations required. What do you guys think are the best use cases for wood CNC? Do you think we would benefit from one? And what brands would you recommend? I'm leaning towards Laguna, blah, 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 blah. Okay, well, look, I don't know that we're going to give them a brand recommendation. I think you need to actually use them and have knowledge in that to
I recommend to get that ones that have a plug. If you can plug it in, good to go.
I like ones that
hard-wired
like,
one?
I like the ones that operate on two axes, you know, one direction and then the other direction, two.
Nice. But not three?
Not three.
You don't want, no, I don't you want, three. Want a Z-axis? You want...
No, no. That's useless. Who uses that? All right. So what he's describing here is kind of how I approach CNC. I looked at CNC as like, that's the robot that can do the things either more accurately than I can do them or that I don't want to do. So we would look at things like production, making templates, getting curves. Like, that was one fun thing about having a CNC. When I used to have to draw a curve by bending wood, it's like, well, it's almost never like a curve, right? It's just the pain
in
the butt.
It'll be asymmetrical no matter what you do.
Yeah, but if I can get a CNC to make that template, now I know that curve is perfectly symmetrical, dead on, and then I could do my normal flush trimming operation to get the workpiece to that same shape. So I think he's thinking in a very limited fashion about this, which is how I think of it. I think once you go beyond that and you start to think about using the CNC for larger scale projects, to use it maybe to generate an entire furniture piece. Instead of cutting the curve for a template, you're cutting the curve in the actual workpiece because it's the same tool path. What's the difference, right? As long as it can fit on the table. And I think in a school environment, you might want to think about this because the students could be very well served by understanding what CNC does, not necessarily because you're going to make the students make templates, but because you're giving them a skill set that's going to be incredibly valuable to them moving forward. I think for that alone, having a CNC in a school environment, especially you're teaching Fusion 360, you got the whole recipe there Absolutely get the CNC. If you don't know what to do with it yet, you will. And the kids will help you figure out what to do with it. I'm all for it, getting a wood CNC there. What do you guys think?
I agree from a hiring perspective. Like, that's at the millwork house, that's all we look for, is that they have experience with the modeling software and they've had some experience with CNC, because it's absolutely integral. So like, if for no other reason than giving these kids a skill, or maybe introducing a kid to something that could lead to a career path. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Do it. Do it.
Yeah. I mean, imagine Nicole does a lot of stuff with 3D printing and teaching kids like Tinkercad and stuff like that. But, and these are just middle school kids. But can you imagine, like, just having experience and exposure to that at such an early age, so it's not a foreign concept, is such a game changer, and giving them a bit of a head start into what kind of technology they may confront in the workforce later. Super valuable stuff.
I think for
I am
for
hoping
me,
to get another CNC. Matt, oh, you were what? Saying something. Sorry.
You can keep going. I was going to give my little thing, but you can finish your thing.
No, good. Give your little thing. Okay. I want to see your little thing.
Knew it. Oh. I knew it. Okay. The minute he said that, I knew it was going to end up there.
Hold on. Show title.
Hold on. What? Show me a little thing.
Matt's little thing.
Okay. Great. This is wonderful. I'm glad I'm
there
here.
There we go. Make sure you put a bell with that, Todd. Thank
ding,
you.
Ding, ding, ding.
Okay. Go ahead.
A little ding-a-ling.
Okay. This is
lovely. I laugh at my own jokes.
So I have been, this has been like on like the low priority list, is to actually get one and kind of experiment with it, because I think at this point in my life, like, I don't know what it can do for me. Like, I kind of get the, like, the doing all the curve stuff, that sounds fantastic, but like beyond that, I'm like, I don't have one here. I don't have any experience with one, like, actually in my workflow to understand like where this can help me. Sort of as an aside, I'm like, do I want it to? Because some of the stuff that I could have it do, I'm like, I kind of like doing that. Like, if
it's
I was
fun,
doing a
right?
chest of drawers,
hey, that's my job.
Yeah, exactly. Like, in the back of my head, like, as an example of something, as I'm thinking, like, what can I use it for? I'm like, okay, if I did like a chest of drawers, I can have it cut the whole side panel out and cut all my sliding dovetail sockets into it all at once. And then maybe I just dovetail the whole case together and that's it. And I don't have to worry about like placement of all those dovetail sockets in all of the drawer blades. Maybe that's like, I kind of like it. I kind of just find it as grunt work too, doing that by like manually. So maybe having the machine do that, but like, I don't have one here. I haven't been able to like go down the road of what I can do with it, what my experience with it can be. It's not a tool that I have in my arsenal in my mind of like, oh, I can have the machine do that instead. They don't have one. So it's like an issue of not knowing.
Well, and you have to be more fluent in it to know what it can and can't do, and how to make it do the thing you want it to do within a reasonable amount of time and accurately.
That's the other thing too. It's like, I don't really like modeling that much, like already right now. And in order for me to actually make that useful, like, I actually have to like model these things. I'm like, I get zero enjoyment out of that. Like, zero. So, like, do I really want to do that? I don't know.
Well, and I think the end goal has to be kept in mind. Are you making products to sell? In which case, the speed and accuracy of a CNC could be very useful. Look at people like, my go-to for this is Daryl Peart. He does an amazing job of blending, you know, fine woodworking techniques and then offloading jobs to the CNC. And there are things that are so dependent on the CNC now that he has trouble, or at least reluctance, in designing a course that uses regular woodworking tools to make that thing. Because he has a beautiful shape that he created. He has the digital file and he just tells the machine to do it, and then it makes it. And then he then refines it from that point to take it to the finish line. And he does sell his work, you know, but if you're in the business of teaching people and sharing your woodworking experiences, and you yourself just love the woodworking process, the CNC is just something that is not quite as useful for people like that. And I'm in that camp. Like, I want my hands on the router. I want to do the work. So I'll use the CNC to make the template instead of just cutting the part on the CNC, which I fully admit is stupid most of the time. You know what I mean?
I have thought about that too. I'm like, I feel more comfortable not messing up the part if I do it manually than putting it on the bed of the CNC that doesn't really know where the part is in space. It just knows where I told it is supposed to be, and then it cuts it out. Well, if I can actually lay the template directly on the piece of wood and get exactly where I want it to be, and I know it's going to cut exactly there every single time, I only have one piece of that wood because it's part of a whole set that came out of one log or one slab or whatever.
Precious.
I can't risk screwing up this part because this is unique. I feel like I'd be a little hesitant to have the machine actually cut the part.
I imagine there must be... See, and this is an area where you don't like that level of like grain composition, especially, Matt, that I know that you like because you're working with that entire slab. Mm-hmm. I don't ever really see that at a commercial level, an industrial level. There must be a function within a CNC to be able to like map the board and choose where the part goes in that board. I'm sure that must be there just by setting your start point. But then you have to lay a Cartesian
exactly
grid.
Where you told it was supposed to be. And, right. You know, or your clamps don't slip. Or
I mean, imagine if you've got a camera and you can lay the camera is showing the board and you can lay the grid over top of it. And no, that must be there. I'm sure I've just never seen anybody doing it.
Because they have the part cutting machines that you put a board in and it'll clear cut sections out of it. So I'm sure there's some kind of optical scanning thing.
What lasers do that as well. Like we've got a Glowforge that does that where you're viewing it on a camera. It's not very accurate, but it does work. But now I think for your average CNC that I would be able to get, you kind of need to know where it's going. And if you're really trying to be careful about that grain that you're talking about and you want a curve to go just in the right spot, yes, it can be done. But that's a little bit tricky and there's planning and there's 10 things that could go wrong to screw it up.
Yeah. And that you don't have any more of that board. That's it.
Yeah.
I would think though, in this particular use case, like I would imagine if you're already teaching the modeling software, but yet not able to take it to fruition, I feel like if I were a student, I'd be like, I'd feel kind of ripped off. Like, what about like, okay, we made this model, but like, what do we do with it? And there are people out there, you know, heck, who grew up with Minecraft and all they're used to doing is building digitally. But I would think that would be a real light bulb moment to be able to turn the corner and turn digital into physical. I think
it's a metal shop and they've got CNC
right,
mill.
Right. Yeah.
So they kind of do
that. Just bring it up to speed, bring the wood up to speed with the metal shop.
Instead of using a CNC mill, I'm assuming it's a mill, not a lathe or something, to be able to do wood stuff instead of just what can be done on the bed of an actual milling machine.
And I think we can get into the weeds just in terms of like people like us using CNC. I think in his situation, this is cut and dry. Like if the funding is there and a school's willing to make the purchase, get the CNC. It's
yeah, because if you don't spend it, they're not going to give it to you next semester.
Right. Yeah. You know how budgets work. Great.
Your parents give you money to open a lemonade stand.
Right. And if they don't want to spend the money, you'd be like, hey, you know my name, right? Rocco.
Rocco.
You know what that means? That means you better spend the money. Bad things are going to happen.
Pay up.
Yeah. Oh, man. Good stuff. All right. Well, that's going to do it for us today. Family owned since 1954, Rocklear is your go-to source for high quality and innovative woodworking tools, finishing supplies, hardware, lumber, and expert advice. Whether you're building a simple bookshelf, a custom desk, or new kitchen cabinets, Rocklear has everything you need to make your next project a success. Visit rocklear.com and use the code WOODTALK, that's all one word, to receive free shipping on most orders over $49. And remember to head to rocklear.com/woodtalk to enter for your chance to win a $250 gift card.
Hooray! Go Rockler. Yay. It's been an interesting show. We've been kind of all over the board. That's because all y'all out there listening to this can send in these weird questions. They don't relate to one another.
They're weird.
Generally, we're not qualified to answer them, so please keep doing that. We love to talk. Oh, yeah. Talk out our asses. It's good.
Speculating. It's fun.
So, yeah. So go to woodtalkshow.com, fill out the form, or just send us an email at woodtalkshow@gmail.com. Or if you want, stalk us on Instagram. We're there too. Wood Talk Show. Hooray for us.
All right.
Hooray.
Good stuff. Who is Santa's favorite singer?
Mrs. Claus?
Nope. You know she can't sing. You stop it.
Yeah, but it's his favorite. I mean, she's got to be his favorite.
Could
always
be a sentimental
support your
spouse,
thing. No matter what.
It's Elvis Presley.
Dang it.
Elvis Presley.
I was trying to come up with something with Sinatra. Elvis Presley.
I did that joke with my kids. They didn't get it. So
they didn't.
There's that.
Yeah. Who?
Not a whole lot of Elvis Presley things happening in the 12 and under set on YouTube. For some reason. So I don't know why.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.